It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, Editor-at-Large at Search ERP, with my colleagues Brian McKenna, Business Applications Editor at Computer Weekly, and Jim O'Donnell, News Editor at Search SAP. SAP's Sapphire Now conference was held virtually for the second year in a row because of COVID-19. With the last 15 months proving the viability of remote work, the importance of supply chains, and the indispensable role of cloud computing, it's no surprise Sapphire revolved around themes of connectivity and community. We'll dig into the new SAP Business Network, the latest from the RISE with SAP Cloud Migration Service, and new tools for environmental sustainability. And we'll give our take on the high-profile debut of SAP's new Chief Marketing and Solutions Officer, Julia White. Jim, there were several key themes, it seemed like, that SAP was trying to present at Sapphire during the keynotes last week. What do you think are the main takeaways from that?
The main thing was Christian Klein and Julie White's keynote on Wednesday, where they had kind of three major product announcements and themes. The major product announcements were this new SAP Business Network, which is really not that new. It's not a new concept. And what it's doing, though, is it's kind of combining three existing SAP networks, the Ariba network for procurement, the SAP Logistics network, which is kind of enables companies to do supply chain management and logistics, and the SAP Asset Intelligence network, which is sort of an IoT-related network for sharing information about industrial machinery and things like that. That was the first product announcement. The second was sort of an expansion of RISE with SAP. RISE with SAP was the announced in January, was their initiative to offer a more SaaS-like product for moving companies to S/4HANA core, kind of based on the SAP Business Network. So they've taken that model and they've kind of put some, I guess, some specific industry wrappers around it. So they've got five different industries that will be able to take advantage of RISE with SAP for their industry. And the five industries were retail, automotive, consumer packaged goods, and industrial machinery and utilities. So those five industries are going to have this RISE with SAP package for their specific industry. And it's interesting because they said that they chose those five industries. So this is what Julie White said. They chose those five industries because of sort of SAP's deep sort of industry knowledge. A lot of customers in those areas, a lot of business partners are already providing, applications and services in those industries. Apparently, there'll be more on the way, but they wanted to start with those five industries that they had a lot of deep experience with. The third sort of major theme was sustainability. This has been kind of a thing. They announced last year at Sapphire that they were, making a big push towards having sustainability products and sort of enabling companies to start sustainability initiatives. So they announced a few specific products that are getting companies to, begin their sustainability initiatives or to track, sustainability programs that they've started. I think the specific products were SAP Responsible Design and Production, which is kind of to track the carbon footprint, the sustainability issues from product design to production. They have SAP Product Footprint Management, which is tracking, sustainability for a product through its enterprise cycle, and SAP Sustainability Control Tower, which was actually pretty cool. I thought the Control Tower, which, enables companies to sort of measure and track sustainability through their initiatives. Christian Klein had a couple of things that I noted that he said during, announcing this initiative was he said that, we must enact on sustainability now and can't act on what you can't measure. So it's a lot of this is allowing companies to measure their sustainability and to meet carbon footprint requirements that may be imposed by government agencies. Also, there's this concept of the circular economy where companies can design sort of sustainability and design reuse of materials used in products from the start of the product design through the end of the product's useful life. You can put those components in for certain things. For certain products, you can put components back into the economy. So they're taking an interesting approach to sustainability. Most people said that they thought that they were good, solid announcements, but the one, phrase I heard from almost anyone I talked to was wait and see. It seemed that it was really preliminary. It seemed that people, these products, some of them aren't even really out yet. So there was a lot of kind of resonating, but like, let's see what's really happening. Let's see what's real with these.
And we, when we participated in a Q&A, a small group of analysts and press with Julia White and DJ Peone, North American president, we were both kind of asking the same question about when do the pieces of the business network also come together, Ariba and business intelligence and asset management. And they seem to be saying it is this year for those other two big pieces. Brian, I listened to a Q&A that you participated in, one of at least two. I think this was with the European and Asian press. You asked a question of Christian Klein related to Ariba and the role, I think, of Ariba in the business network. Can you talk a little bit about how that went?
It struck me as interesting that they were putting such kind of an emphasis on the business network. I mean, it makes historical sense because we've lived through COVID, and COVID has disrupted supply chains globally big time, not just COVID, but that boat getting stuck in the Suez Canal and so on, semiconductor shortage. So he referred to all of those things, not just COVID. And they're leading on that. And for historically contingent reasons, you can understand why, given what we've all been living through. I just wondered, to what extent it was a risk for SAP to major so much on technology that's been acquired, given that COVID will pass and a lot of these supply chain problems will begin to fade into the background again, which is where they were before. I mean, you quite often hear executives saying, I never thought I'd be talking about supply chain so much. Well, guess what? You might not be in 2 or 3 years' time, because this will just fade and kind of boil down to business as usual again. And supply chain management is a business discipline. It's only partly to do with tech. But his response to that was to say, it's not just Ariba. It's also, what are those other things again? I keep forgetting.
Asset intelligence.
Asset management and logistics.
Logistics is another one.
Yeah, and you were saying that actually they do have a definite plan for bringing those three things together, so it's not just Ariba. But the thing about Ariba, of course, is that SAP didn't build it. Mm-hmm. Acquired tech, cloud tech. And I think there's something to be said for the old-fashioned strategic view that what makes you special is what you built yourself. Yeah. And SAP has built HANA. It has a long history in ERP, more or less invented the concept. So S/4HANA built on top of HANA, et cetera, et cetera. And I would anticipate that in a couple of years' time, we'll be back to not talking quite so much about this, the world's biggest business network.
You know, it is interesting that you mentioned things will go back to what we were doing before, but, you know, SAP does have a history of sort of making these sapphire splashes about, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, everything was about Leonardo, which was, advanced technology, toolbox that everyone was going to use. And then, you know, pretty much a year or two later, you didn't hear anything about it. So I'd be curious to see if this is, you know, a similar thing would happen with something like the business network.
Mm-hmm. Brian, I think it was in response to your question of Christian Klein about Ariba and the putting together of the network. I caught onto the fact that he did say that it was one interface, and they have said that the dashboard is available now. I don't know when that happened or if they just sort of released it quietly right before Sapphire. So a dashboard can be rather superficial. You know, it's like literally the thing people see, a user interface, but it, you know, has integrations through the back end. But he was talking about the look and feel among the three major elements will be the same. He talked as if it's already the same, which maybe is the dashboard element, but that is significant because he has put a stake in the ground early in his tenure as CEO to do a better job of integrating these usually acquired, but also integrating them with S/4HANA, the things that SAP has developed. And I think he might have made a point of talking about the user interface and look and feel, because I think maybe that wasn't the case until not long ago. And I should have checked this, but that Ariba, as often happens with acquired companies, they had their own user interface, they had their own data model. He also talked about a common data model, which I guess is presumably going to be.
Yeah, they talk about that quite a lot. Yeah, they do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be absolutely crucial. And I have talked to a few people that really question whether they're going to be able to pull that off with one data model. And with a better UI, One of the analysts that we talked to regularly that I chatted with after Sapphire was Josh Greenbaum. He just thinks that the Ariba UX is one of the worst pieces of software ever made. And he's been saying for years that they really need to make that easier. You know, he says for if you're like a large enterprise with a, you know, huge procurement department, it's one thing, but if they want to try to, you know, make this business network something that, you know, can be appealing to, you know, a wide variety of companies with don't have large procurement networks, they really have to put some serious work into redesigning that UX and making sure that the, you know, the data really does exist on one common platform. Now, in our chat with Julie White and DJ Peonis, you said, Dave, Julie White made the point that, you know, a lot of these places to make a network like this, a lot of pieces weren't in place, you know, a few years ago. They didn't have the business technology platform, which is their sort of integration environment they put out in the last year or so. So maybe there are, you know, certain pieces that can make it work. But again, I think it's really a, you know, it's a wait and see situation.
You know, it's not like Ariba plus two other elements that make up the business network. It's not like it's the only one in town. There are other networks available. There's Infor's
GT Nexus.
Yeah, which they acquired as well. And then there's OpenText with their trading platform. And I'm sure there are others, which the names of which are just escaping me at the moment. I suppose what's SAP's advantage here is that it runs so much. I suppose that's what they'll come down to saying is that we are the biggest. And what I did like about what Julia White said was we have a responsibility, she said, and she reiterated this a few times, to kind of help to solve this problem in the context of COVID and whatever comes after, that we have almost like a moral responsibility to do that. I quite like that messaging.
Mm-hmm. So all three of us have mentioned Julia White. You could say it a debut, and certainly the most public thing that SAP does. And she was front and center in a lot of things, and with Christian Klein doing the main keynote, and also very public with the press and analysts doing different briefings. Also with the industry-specific week that started this week, the week of June 7th. So she's an ex-Microsoft person, came from the Azure. Interestingly, haven't had a chance to poke into this a little bit, but interesting from the Microsoft Azure, the hyperscale division, a division that SAP has had a relationship with and started its effort to make its applications available on the hyperscaler cloud platforms, and initially did a lot of that work with the Microsoft Azure division. She came over, I guess, roughly 3 months ago, as Jim said, Chief Marketing and Solutions Officer.
So that is very recent, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I have to say, she seems quite good. I mean, in terms of as someone who can talk the talk, and she herself mentioned, I think, in some of the briefings that SAP needs to do a better job of getting its story out, that actually it has a better story about how it has served the needs of particular industries all these years.
I was very keen in a session I attended with Julia White and with Scott Russell, mm-hmm. to ask the question, well, to what extent is cloud necessary for business transformation? Mm-hmm. Because one thing that she seemed really intent on saying, and I heard her say it in at least two different venues, I think during the keynote and during at least one of the media and analyst sessions, was at the beginning of COVID, the crisis, we saw a lot of lifting and shifting at the start of the pandemic and some low-code and no-code activity, but that now, pulling out of the pandemic, we're starting to see more digitization of core business processes, you know, more, we're trying to see more of that kind of genuinely business transformational stuff. And that's where SAP has an advantage because of its software and so on. So I was keen to get an answer to this question, which was, can you do business transformation on-premise? Do you have to be in the cloud? And she basically said that you do have to be in the cloud. She said, yeah, you can do business transformation, but it will be slow moving and you won't benefit from the AI models that require a cloud environment.
That's something Oracle says with their cloud products too, that you have to go to the cloud to get that stuff, that leading edge, digitally transform.
So she wasn't hedging her bets there. I mean, quite often with SAP, they say no customer left behind.
Right. Yeah.
We serve all our on-premise customers.
Dave, I know we were on that fireside chat with Julie and DJ Payone, and I think John Reed of Economica kind of had the same question as, you know, can you do digital transformation without moving to S/4HANA specifically, but I think cloud was sort of implied there too. And they didn't say it as explicitly. I don't recall Julie saying it as explicitly as Brian maybe got that answer, but it seemed to me that they said, well, yes, you can stay on ECC and you can sort of do things, you know, sort of on, you know, you might move your HR with success factors, or you might move certain pieces to the cloud. But I don't know, I got the impression that, you know, without having that digital sort of core of S/4HANA, that it really wasn't going to, you know, be a real transformation. I don't know if that's the impression you got.
Your recollection of that is exactly in line with mine. I went back and checked that comment. It was very similar to what Brian said in his session, that yes, you can, but, you know, it was sort of a passing. Of course, we have these other technologies, implication being on-premises, yes, but.
She made a particular point of saying that artificial intelligence, you know, those models require a cloud environment really to kind of get the most out of those. Our colleague Scott Russell, in response to the same question, he said they are intertwined. Cloud and business transformation are intertwined. Mm-hmm. So quite a strong statement, but not, I think, as strong as Julia's maybe coming from the Microsoft Azure background.
Mm-hmm. I think we're free to speculate. So Brian, and you and I in particular, and maybe Jim a little bit earlier, it's very striking that an American was appointed to a very senior position and also brought onto the executive board and given a very high profile role at Sapphire. It did make me wonder, and some of us wonder, if having an American front and center is an important part of SAP strategies. A question I didn't really get a chance to ask of Julia herself, but we had Bill McDermott, possibly the world's greatest salesman, as CEO for years. He started out as co-CEO with Jim Hagemann Snabe, but he was co-CEO for a while and then CEO for many years. And then after he left, Jennifer Morgan, an American, also was co-CEO with Christian Klein, but that was a fairly short tenure. And now, not very long after Jennifer's departure, we have Julia White, very high profile. So I don't know where I'm going with this or how far we want to go with this, but it seems to be a thing.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't ascribe as much to her Americanness. I think it's probably her. I think she's, you know, I thought she did a very good job of, you know, kind of explaining what they were doing. And
yeah, you know, she has a different dimension. Yeah,
that cloud background, I think that's definitely that's a big part of it. But I think, you know, as front men go, quote unquote, for the company, Christian Klein has been doing a pretty admirable job. I think he gets out there and he gets the message across pretty well. So I think she's kind of a real good compliment to Christian Klein.
But yeah, Jim's said very well. She is very articulate and. You know, she just seems really human. So, yeah, she's, you know, clearly going to be a major asset for SAP. But I guess like any new employee, it's early days for her and she maybe has quite a lot to learn. And I don't think she's met very many of her colleagues, she said.
She said that on our session too.
Yeah, she's met Christian Klein. But I don't think she's met any of the others. So it has to be early days. I was also quite, kind of in a way intrigued that she, because she was the one who took responsibility for announcing upscale commerce in the keynote. I think that was one of her sections. And guys, I remember this being announced by Alex Atzberger in Barcelona in 2019. So that was it's a re-announcement, isn't it? The upscale.
Yes, and Dan Fluckinger, our colleague, did a piece on that. That it was a relaunch. Mm-hmm. This might be a good place to just take a step back and look at the big picture. So now that we've been through part of another Sapphire, it's not done yet, but the main part seems to be done. Where does this leave SAP, first of all, in terms of what customers should care about, what it's doing for customers or not doing for customers? How does this advance the ball in terms of cloud migration?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say I'm not sure. You know, I think that I'm not sure if these messages really resonate with the average sort of SAP customer. I mean, I think they had a very high-minded message. I think the business technology network is a very good in concept. I think sustainability is an issue that we all need to be paying attention to.
Yeah.
And I think that it's great that SAP is sort of leading out on that, but whether it's actually resonating with their, the companies that are trying to get out of, trying to rebuild out of COVID, are they going to really start to implement sustainability programs? I don't know, maybe not this year, but maybe they will in the future. So, and I don't know if that's the point of Sapphire these days, is to sort of hit where, companies are right now or where they're going to be, in a couple of years, as you're sort of laying out some markers. Mm-hmm. And sustainability is certainly one that, maybe because SAP is a German company overall, and sustainability seems to be it's definitely an issue, I think, that resonates more in Europe. Maybe Brian, you can, attest to that a little bit, but.
I've not had any comments so far from the UK and Ireland SAP user group, who are very, important community of people to listen to. Rise with SAP has been attracting customers. I spoke to a small business customer in the UK for Rise with SAP, Briggs of Burton, who make hygienic equipment for, they've got a long history in brewing and distilling, but they also do pharma and things like that. Very interesting little business case study, but they're a customer for Rise. And I spoke to their financial director, who told me that they threw in Ariba as well. So it's interesting that Rise seems to be gathering other things. I mean, in that case, it was part of a deal with a customer that they were getting access to the procurement network, Ariba. But they do seem to be, I know we've touched on this, just adding things to Rise, which does kind of beg the question of why those things weren't there in the first place, or whether that's actually a cunning plan and they want to just over time kind of add more and more things into Rise to just keep the momentum going. I don't know. What are you guys hearing about that? Because clearly Rise has been a big leitmotif of the year for SAP. They started the year with they've come back to it now at Sapphire, having said they've expanded it. I can't remember exactly what they've expanded it to. I think it's some HR stuff they've added in.
Yeah.
I've heard, at least someone say, or at least the sentiments out there, that Rise is kind of a no-brainer if you are that type of company that you were talking about, Brian. If you're sort of a greenfield, small sort of to medium enterprise, you don't have the systems already in place, then it's a no-brainer. But if you're the large enterprises, which makes up, a huge portion of their existing customer base, I don't know if it resonates as clearly with that customer, so.
I was taking notes from the European and Asian Q&A, and Julia White mentioned this Rise with SAP for modular cloud ERP. I think that's actually a title. And that's the one that has HR, Brian, that you mentioned, S/4HANA and procurement. So this notion of modularity as a benefit and being able to not having to take the whole enchilada, the whole horrible one-size-fits-all system, but being able to add things in a modular way. It's not like SAP has never had that. And certainly other vendors, cloud-oriented vendors with big platforms, have talked that way for years. But I thought it was interesting that they are pushing, and they even have it in the title now, the idea of modular ERP, so that you can add pieces. And Oracle has been doing that for a while. So I guess I don't have a clear sense of where this puts them in competition with their main rival. It seems as if they are moving the ball forward, maybe not in a dramatic way this year. They are filling in more of the pieces of what people seem to want, which is ability to move to the cloud and to add components where it makes sense. And HR is often the piece, and they have SuccessFactors, a very successful platform for doing that.
In the executive board session today, this is actually John Gilk who said this, and he was standing in for one of his colleagues, but he talked about the notion of ERP is now changing so much, and it's kind of assembled in the cloud, and customers above all need agility and flexibility. And I've spoken on this podcast before about, the changing face of ERP and how it's becoming more modular, and how some of SAP's competitors are almost shying away from the term ERP, this kind of next generation ERP that you can interact with in various ways. SAP's, that concept of modularity is clearly there for them too.
The old journalistic cliche, only time will tell, seems appropriate here.
Guys, and in particular, Jim, this time last year, I think, the business technology platform was kind of announced. I know you wrote about this, Jim, and our colleague Aaron Tan has also written about the business technology platform. In one of the sessions that I was in, they were just kind of casually referring to BTP. So this is very much part of the SAP universe and vocabulary, the BTP. I'm not sure that was, I would have got that from either Christian or from Julia, but you know, it's not something you can buy from SAP.
Right.
It's the way that they're transmitting it to the customer base.
Yeah, I think that the BTP is kind of, you know, the sort of the underlying glue that is going to make all this sort of connections of the business network happen.
Yeah.
As you said, it's not something that you're going to like actually go out and see, but you know, it's really, it's kind of the thing that's going to, you know, make it possible, basically.
It seemed like it was mentioned in passing more at this last Sapphire. It's not that it wasn't mentioned, but it certainly wasn't front and center. Is that part of what you're getting at, Brian, that it was?
I did cheekily wonder if it might be another way of saying Leonardo, but, but then Leonardo was more about the really cutting edge tech, wasn't it? It was more of an Internet of Things and plus artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Leonardo seemed to be a little more peripheral, whereas I think BTP is kind of really at the core of what they're, you know, what they're trying to do with integration and having that common data model that'll drive all this.
Yeah.
But I bet if we were to talk to some of our SAP user contacts, even very senior ones, IT directors and CIOs, I mean, I wonder if they would even recognize the term BTP. I mean, they might. But certainly in the lexicon of SAP executives, that's it's a key term.
Well, this is probably a good place to end it. Thanks, Brian. And thanks, Jim, as always.